Hey guys, this is fashion, portrait, and automotive photographer Alex Stone, and you're listening to the Petapixel Photography Podcast with Sharky James.
Welcome to the Petapixel Photography Podcast, episode 89, When Lunatics Attack. In this episode, a man nearly runs a photographer down, then assaults him, and we have the photographer in his own words. Why Tom Hogan is sticking with his DSLRs, and why I may as well. A photojournalist makes an iconic image, Zeiss drops a new 50, Leica gets a huge boost, and DJI and Hasselblad team up on a new aerial platform. All that and more in episode 89 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Thank you so much, Alex, for opening the show. I greatly appreciate it, brother. If the name Alex Stone sounds familiar to you, you may be one of the millions of people who've now seen a rather crazy video in which a lunatic in a truck nearly ran him over during a photo shoot recently. Alex made the news thanks to said lunatic, and while that was an ugly situation, what's not ugly is his photography. He's an exceptional photographer, and now a whole lot more people know this, so hey, lemonade, right? His clients include the Fry Company, John Varvatos, and Juicy Couture, among others, and I'm convinced that if you have an assignment, Alex Stone can handle it. Head on over to his website at alexstone.co after this show and see for yourself. I think you're really going to enjoy his photography. Now, not only was Alex kind enough to open the show for us, but we're going to hear from the man himself in our main story and find out what exactly happened on that road, or if you're the lunatic, driveway, on July 9th of 2016. So stay tuned. And I'd like to thank you all for joining us here in episode 89 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. We appreciate you all so much, and thank you all for subscribing, rating, and reviewing us in iTunes or wherever else you listen to us. And as always, we appreciate you hitting that subscribe button, showing the show some love, and also telling your friends on social media and elsewhere and helping to get the word out about this show. Okay, with that, I'm your host, Sharky James. Let's hit it. Imagine that you and some clients are out doing a photo shoot, or maybe you're out with your friend shooting. A lunatic drives up like a bat out of hell and threatens you with a rather large truck. What do you do? Especially if you're in the middle of nowhere. You know, it's definitely a personal decision, and it's going to depend on how you're able to defend yourself and the laws in your area, of course. The safety of yourself and those with you is priority one. It's one thing for someone to hassle you and call you names, but when they're using their vehicle against you, that's a potentially deadly situation right there. Either way, I think it's important to be prepared, and I think it's always a good idea to put some thought into how you'd handle being accosted like this, rather than figuring it out on the spot, because those decisions you make out there could be life or death. Now, some of you may have not seen this video yet, which went viral this week, but you'll be shocked. As photographers, I think that we need to be mindful not only of the possibility of getting robbed because we have thousands of dollars worth of gear on us, but also the angry people out there who think that maybe you photographed them or their property, or they think you're on their property, or any number of other ridiculous reasons. And that's what happened recently when photographer Alex Stone was doing a shoot in Ramona, California, when 52-year-old Mark Wayne Gordon approached the group and began hassling them, along with some pretty salty language. Now, the photographer and those with him remained calm and did the right thing by trying to defuse the situation. I mean, Stone even politely called the man sir, even though he didn't deserve that because he wasn't acting like a gentleman. And he said please a number of times as well, but that wasn't enough for this guy. Despite all that, Gordon can be seen swinging his truck around, warning the photographer to remove his blank. I'm trying to keep the clean rating here on the podcast, so you can imagine what he said. And then he accelerates towards Stone's gear, as well as Stone, who is trying to do the right thing and get his gear out of the way. Gordon then drives like a lunatic and then aims right for Stone, and he could have run him over. I mean, who knows if this guy was drunk or whatever, and what his ability to operate the vehicle was. Imagine if you witness a lunatic like this accelerating towards your wife or your girlfriend or, I don't know, one of your kids the first time, and then he does it again. What do you do? I've checked with quite a few friends of mine in law enforcement, and they say that not only would a citizen have been justified in protecting their life or another's with deadly force, that's how they would have reacted. So Gordon is lucky that no one had a gun with them and was inclined to shoot him after this. I decided to reach out to Alex Stone himself so we can hear the man in his own words what happened that day. So I'm going to go ahead and play that clip right now.
So the big question on everybody's mind is if we were blocking this gentleman's driveway in the video, and really there was no driveway in sight. I'm an automotive photographer, so I find empty roads, empty deserted roads, where we can pop a squat for about 15-20 minutes so I can get a couple shots off. And we were towards the tail end of our shoot when this gentleman kind of drove up, and I mean, the video speaks for itself. He just began to, like, first verbally threaten us, and then he ended up trying to ram us with his car until he finally got out and physically started assaulting us. So in this type of automotive photography, we shoot for parts manufacturers or wheel companies who have parts on these cars, and they actually commission us to shoot owners' cars. For this particular shoot, the client wasn't there, but you know, the owner of the car was there. We were just taking a couple photos of his car, and I mean, it just escalated to what you see in the video. None of us were armed, for sure. I wasn't armed, the owner of the car that I was shooting wasn't armed, and his friend that was on the set as well was not armed. I can't say if the gentleman in this video was armed or not. I mean, I feel like if he was, he might have popped it out already, but he definitely didn't show, you know, brand any weapons at the time of. It was mostly just him grabbing us, pushing us, and at the end of the video, as you can see, he just hits my phone right out of my hand. It flies 20 feet in the air and lands and just breaks. Screen goes black, and that's when I thought I had lost the video. However, a few hours later, I took it to straight to an Apple store, and luckily, they were able to fix the screen and save the video. I don't think this situation really makes me want to be armed or get any type of protection for photo shoots. I mean, we're photographers. Photographers should be able to handle themselves, you know, kind of in any situation that's brought up. At the time, I was afraid for the owner of the car. I was afraid for Chris, who was there, the younger kid. You know, I didn't want them to get hurt. I had really expensive lights, you know, on light stands that he was actually aiming for, and you know, I didn't want anything broken. I didn't want anyone hurt. I was just trying to defuse the situation as much as I could. You know, you see on these forums and on these YouTube comments, like, people are like, you know, grab that light stand, hit him over the face, like, blah blah blah. You know, that was nowhere near. That wasn't even in my head. I was trying to make sure that nothing happened to any of the equipment. The last thing I wanted to do was hit him with a light stand or a $2,000 Profoto light. Like, that was definitely the last thing that was running through my head. You know, one thing I would tell photographers, you know, I've had lots of great feedback from photographers sending me emails saying how well I handled the situation and everything, and I thank them all. The photography community has been nothing but supportive throughout all of this, and I will say, you know, when you're out there shooting, you know, in public, stay professional. You know, there's no reason to stoop down to anybody's level who's doing anything, calling you names or threatening you. Like, there's no reason to do that. You know, just pack up, leave. There's really no reason to get mad over anything or get hurt or hurt someone else or anything. You know, just definitely stay cool out there. And I feel like a lot of photographers know that. You know, they know a really professional industry that you know, at the end of the day, we're just there to get photos. And that was really the important thing about that day.
What a crazy incident, huh? I mean, can you imagine that happening to you? Now, after they saw the video, Gordon was interviewed by police. He was arrested, and he's been charged with felony assault with a deadly weapon, his truck, of course, misdemeanor battery for assaulting Stone and the other guy, and misdemeanor vandalism, which I'm guessing is damage to Stone's phone. You know, ultimately, how you handle a situation like this could determine so many things. You know, whether or not you get injured or killed, or end up in prison for a number of years if you shoot someone, they decide to charge you. Who knows? You know, it's an incredibly complex matter, and there's definitely not a one-size-fits-all answer here. But it's something that I want everyone to think about how you would react if you're assaulted like this. I'd like to know what you guys would do in this situation, so please head on over to the show notes at episode 89 at petapixel.com/podcast and let me know how you would have handled this. And even if you don't do that, I want everyone, like I said, to think about how you would react if you're out shooting and you're confronted like this. Now, when we find out what happens to this guy, we'll make sure to let you know here on the podcast, of course. Once you see this video, I think that about 100% of the people that see it would agree that this guy deserves some jail time. No doubt about it. Next. As a former photojournalist, I can tell you, you live for one image that's going to define your career. Like Nick Ut's Napalm Girl or Steve McCurry's Afghan Girl. Okay, maybe it helps to have a female in the photo. I don't know. I'm starting to see a little trend here. And that trend continues with an incredible photo shot by Reuters photographer Jonathan Bachman of a young black woman standing peacefully in the street during a Black Lives Matter protest as two police officers clad in riot gear rush in to arrest her. The strikingly powerful image was shot by Bachman on Saturday, July 8, 2016, during the protest in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and it's the kind of image that many of us wish we had captured. The police had ordered protesters to clear the street or take the risk of being arrested, and that's when 28-year-old nurse Aisha Evans decided to step out into the street, approach the massive line of police, and stood there in protest. An act that people have likened to the iconic Tank Man photo shot by AP photographer Jeff Widener during the Tiananmen Square protests in Beijing, China, a little over 27 years ago now. Bachman's photo is powerful, and I think it's worth hitting the show notes to see. It not only captures a moment, but it tells a story, and that's what we strive to do in photojournalism, of course. The goal is for the photograph to stand on its own and tell the viewer everything that they need to know without having to read the caption below it. And as photographers in general, it's not at all a bad thing to strive towards capturing images which tell a story. For those that are listening to me right now, wanting to create something more impactful, look for stories to tell in a single frame. It is a lot of fun to do, and when you nail it, your photos are so much more impactful. Now, I'm not talking about a sequence of photos, although there's a place for that, but I want for people to strive for photos that are worthy of being in your portfolio, which handle their business and say it all on their own in one frame. I think that when you're shooting, be mindful of storytelling, and then no matter what your subject is, you'll have raised your game, I think. Next. I got a bit of flack for saying in episode 88 that Sony's E-mount lens lineup was nicer than that of Fujifilm's. But to me, the full-frame glass, especially the G-Master series, is quite compelling. And there's a lot of great Zeiss glass to choose from, like Zeiss's 55mm f1.8 lens. It is amazing. I once owned it, and wow, that thing is sharp. But of course, you would expect that from a lens that cost $1,000. Now, if you're on the Sony E-mount system, you love Zeiss glass, who doesn't, right? And you want a bit more speed and background blur, you might salivate over the new Zeiss Planar T 50mm f1.4 ZA that features an 11-bladed circular aperture for what they're characterizing as stunning bokeh. That's their words. The company is claiming that it has consistent resolution and contrast from center to corner within the frame, and that includes being shot wide open at f1.4. Now, think about that for a second here. Most lenses, even some rather expensive ones out there, don't make that claim. If true, and I have no reason to disbelieve Zeiss, that's quite an achievement. And is going to be expensive, of course. This lens features the planar design for minimized distortion, AA and ED glass elements for reducing spherical and chromatic aberration, Zeiss T coating to reduce ghosting and flare, which is similar to Nikon's nano crystal coating, a ring drive supersonic wave motor to provide fast, accurate, and quiet autofocus, and it's dust and moisture resistant as you might expect. And you might also expect that with the Zeiss name and quality, that there's going to be a hefty price tag. And you would be right. This new full-frame 50, which is available any day now, will set you back $1,500 US. I know. Gulp. Start saving now, because that is a big chunk of change for a 50. But you know what? It's fast glass, and it's Zeiss, and you really do get what you pay for with those lenses. Also in Sony news, they finally revealed the price of that G-Master 70-200 2.8 that they announced 5 months ago, back in February 2016. And not surprisingly, it's crazy expensive too, coming in at $2,600 US. That's also said to ship any day now, if you have that kind of money. You know, I think that many are just going to stick with Sony's 70-200 f4, which I own and love, and just pocket the rest of the money, because that is a lot to pay for a 70-200 these days. I mean, they're all expensive, but $2,600? Sony, that is just painful. Next. Over the years, I've shot Nikon or Canon at one time or another, just like many of you out there, and nearly 2 years ago, started integrating some Sony gear, which I really, really enjoy. The mirrorless stuff was new and fun at the time, but it's fair to say that as I've had more time with it, the honeymoon is definitely over. In fact, at this point in time, I'm not sure exactly which system I'm going to go with. That's both crazy and kind of exciting. Now, that's not to say that I don't still love the mirrorless stuff, because I really do. But recently, I've left my Sony A6000 at home, and I've shot more with my Nikons instead. And I've got to say that here in July of 2016, for those of us who prefer to shoot sports or other action, the DSLR still wins out. Now, I can make it work with my A6000, but the DSLR's controls are just so much easier to operate. You get so much more done. Now, many of you know the name Tom Hogan of buytom.com. That's T-H-O-M. Well, he recently published an article entitled 7 Reasons Why I'm Still a Nikon DSLR User, which we republished over at the Petapixel Mothership. And I feel like he has some pretty interesting points, whether you're a Nikon person or not, and you're considering a switch from a DSLR system to mirrorless. So Tom's points break down as follows. 1. The viewfinder. He points out that the EVF is still not on par with the optical viewfinder in his Nikons, and while that should be resolved in the future, we're not there just yet. And as someone who shoots a lot of action, the lag is untenable. Now, recently when I shot baseball with my old D700, I gotta tell you, I really missed that big, bright optical viewfinder. I mean, it is just so much different than looking into a mirrorless system with an EVF. His second point has to do with lenses. You know, you can get pretty much everything you need, especially really long, fast glass for sports and action, on a DSLR system. And so far, that's missing with mirrorless. His third point has to do with battery life. You know, this is one I hear about all the time from people who've switched to mirrorless and weren't aware that this was going to happen. Most mirrorless systems, the batteries, especially in the Sonys, don't last very long. Those tiny batteries, you know, which don't hold much capacity-wise, are not only driving the rest of the camera, as Tom points out, but they're also keeping that EVF or the LCD around back constantly lit, and that's eating battery life like crazy. So you're going to need quite a few batteries to have the equivalent of what you would with a DSLR battery, especially the big Nikon and Canon ones, which last all darn day. Now, his fourth point has to do with focus and accuracy. And as Tom points out, a DSLR's phase detect system with a good in-lens motor is going to smoke a mirrorless system currently. And I agree with that 100%. That's just how it is, plain and simple. His fifth point is controls and ergonomics. As Tom points out, with his Nikons, he can keep his eye to the viewfinder and operate the controls no problem and get the job done. Now, with various mirrorless systems, it just isn't as intuitive. It's getting better with the Fujifilm X-T1 and now the X-T2 that's coming out. But with the others, as he notes, not so much. One thing that he's frustrated by, and it makes me insane too, is that the buttons on the mirrorless systems are often so small and oddly placed that you're just not entirely confident when you're pressing them that you're pressing the button that you meant to. With my Nikons, and also with Canons as well, you know where the buttons are, and you know what you're pressing. Point number 6 for him is buffer performance. Now, needless to say, this is an area where DSLRs have excelled, and certainly the Nikon D5 and D500, as well as Canon's 1DX Mark II, are practically limitless in this regard. The mirrorless stuff, no. So far, the buffers in the mirrorless systems just haven't been able to keep up. In my A6000, I can shoot 11 frames per second, but I'm going to hit that buffer within a couple of seconds and have to wait, and that means you're missing shots. Now, I know a lot of people are saying, hey, the A6000, it's a $500 camera. Even the A6300 at $1,000 is still 1/6 the cost of a D5 or a Canon 1DX Mark II. So, of course, I realize it's apples and oranges here, but currently there isn't any Sony E-mount sports body. So that's kind of the best we have available on the mirrorless side as far as shooting sports. And his 7th point is one that I think many wouldn't think of, and it's neutrality. Tom loves the JPEGs that come out of his Nikons when he sets it to a neutral picture control. It's free of weird color shifts and other maladies, and he likes that. Now, he makes a great point that the mirrorless systems, of course, are going to progress, but they're chasing DSLR systems that aren't stationary. Those things are progressing as well. And while Sony may be coming out with all kinds of cool things, and Nikon and Canon haven't really been doing a whole lot of innovating so much, they still are improving things when it comes to buffer speed, etc. Now, if you're thinking about switching from a DSLR system to mirrorless, I think it's worthwhile to hit the show notes and to read Tom's entire article because it's very detailed. I'm just giving you a little simplified overview right here and my impressions of what he said. For myself, I don't shoot nearly as much as I did when I was a photojournalist, but when I do shoot, I prefer to shoot sports and action. It's what I really enjoy shooting, and mirrorless just isn't there yet for me. You know, I love that darn Sony a6000. I'm sure I would love an a6300. They're incredibly fun to shoot, but if you put any reasonable Nikon DSLR in my hand, like my D7200 or even my old D700, etc., I'm not going to miss the peak moments of action like I would with the mirrorless stuff. You know, my a6000 screams at 11 frames per second, and that smokes most other bodies in that regard, but I know I'm missing shots because the controls just aren't there, they're hard to get to, and you're not exactly sure what exactly you're manipulating at that point. And that's true of many of the other mirrorless bodies, unfortunately. They're just not ideal for shooting sports. Now, if you're shooting landscapes or portraits, then you have a lot more time to operate the controls, of course, and this isn't much of an issue, but I'm talking about sports and action here. So with football season rapidly approaching, I've got a decision to make. Do I ditch the Sony stuff and get something like a Nikon D500, which is incredibly tempting? It looks like an amazing camera. Or do I make the A6000 work or even get an A6300? Or do I wait for the rumored Sony A9 sports body, which we keep hearing about, or switch camps completely and go over to Canon, or something entirely different than all of that? The answer just isn't clear to me right now. You know, my needs have changed. So reading Tom's article has really helped me get my head straight on this and made me think more about the limitations of my current mirrorless system and how much I really miss the operability and the speed of the DSLR. But you know what? This could all change if Sony drops that A9 on us and it's amazing. So you just never know. I'd hate to switch to another system and then Sony comes out with the A9 and then I'm kicking myself. And I know so many of you out there struggle with these decisions. I'm not at all immune to them. And the answer just isn't clear to me right now which way I should go with this. So if you've got suggestions, I want to hear them. Leave the comments over in the show notes page for episode 89 at petapixel.com/podcast, and let's have a discussion about this. Maybe you can help me figure this out right now, because honestly, I'm seriously leaning towards going back in the DSLR direction. And those of you who've been following this podcast for a while now, your jaws are dropping, because I've been all about mirrorless for a while. And now, I don't know. I think I want to go back DSLR. Isn't that crazy? Like I said, the honeymoon is over, and I need you guys to weigh in on this. Next. Months ago, I told you about a crazy but revolutionary camera by a company called Lyte. The multi-aperture computational camera known as the L16 uses 16 separate camera modules which team up to capture 52 megapixel photos in a way that we've never seen before. This camera could easily be mistaken for a smartphone due to its shape, but unlike your smartphone, this camera produces images that the company says creates a, quote, DSLR quality image, end quote. And like Lytro's light field cameras, give you the ability to choose your focus after the fact. Not only that, they claim it features incredible low light performance and a whole lot more. Now, this unique camera goes for $1,699 US, and that's something that most people aren't going to be willing to pay. But according to the company's website, it's sold out until 2017. Lyte is making news again, though, because they raised $30 million US in additional funding, and thanks to the feedback they've received, they've got a number of improvements in the works. And one of those is a wider focal range. Rather than the 35 to 150 millimeter optical zoom equivalent, the camera will soon feature a 28 to 150 millimeter range. Now, that doesn't sound huge, of course, but that extra 7 millimeters on the wide end is incredibly helpful if you're shooting the types of things that you might shoot now with your smartphone, and that's subjects which aren't too far from you, of course. That and being able to get more of the scene in the frame. And that's especially useful if you take one of these on vacation. And I have a feeling that at this price point and with these features, that's kind of what they had in mind here. In fact, of this, the company says, quote, "The wider zoom range will make for more dramatic landscapes, more interesting street and architectural photos, and a more versatile camera overall," end quote. Now, with 52 megapixel images comes rather large file sizes, of course. And with the feedback that they've received, they've bumped up the internal storage to 256 gigabytes rather than the 128 gigabytes when it was announced. Twice the storage capacity is certainly appreciated, especially when you're dropping a good chunk of change for one of these things. Think about how massive of an endeavor it is to A, create something that didn't exist before, and two, to get them manufactured. I mean, it just hurts my head thinking about it. There's so much technology in this thing that didn't exist before, not like this. Listen, most of us will never own or use one of these cameras, but all these companies that are developing these new technologies, they push things forward in our industry in general, and I think that inspires others to bring things to the DSLR and the mirrorless systems that you see these other cameras doing. Now, we're not going to see 16 lenses in a DSLR or a mirrorless system, and not even our smartphones anytime soon, so it's pretty much going to stay in this camera. I can't wait to see images from this odd-looking camera when they're out there in the wild. And wild is how you would describe how this thing looks. Google L16 and see it for yourself if you haven't already. Next. What happens when DJI and Hasselblad team up? Well, you know it's going to be expensive and it's going to fly. The leader in drone technology and the leader in expensive cameras that most of us will never own have announced that they're creating the ultimate high-quality aerial platform for image makers with deep pockets, and it's sure to be incredible. The duo announced what will be DJI's M600 professional drone paired with Hasselblad's amazing A5D medium format camera. You heard that right, medium format drone photography, and it's pretty darn sweet. Of this collaboration, Hasselblad CEO Perry Oosting said, quote, "Combining best-in-class aerial optics with the world's most powerful aerial platform is a natural development for DJI and Hasselblad. We are delighted to provide this unique bundle to professional photographers, surveyors, and mappers," end quote. The $4,599 US DJI M600 and Ronin MX gimbal system has six intelligent batteries, the A3 flight controller, Lightbridge 2 transmission system, powerful app control, and a dustproof propulsion system. Hasselblad's A5D, which the company announced a little over a year ago now in June of 2015, pairs high-end optics and sensors in a compact body that's light enough to be carried by a drone without unnecessarily reducing its flight time due to excessive weight. You know, if you think about it, this solution is interesting, but not at all surprising because DJI owns a minority stake in Hasselblad, so you can expect that this is just the start of some really cool things out of these two great companies. Now, they haven't announced pricing nor availability for this system, but you can bet it's going to be quite expensive. Like Hasselblad, of course, this is some high-end stuff. I'd like to thank you all for listening to episode 89 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Don't forget to check us out at petapixel.com/podcast for the show notes and to see what else we have for you. If you head on over there, you can leave us a voicemail question that we can answer here on the show. Or if you don't feel comfortable leaving a voicemail, feel free to email me at lensshark@gmail.com. And if you'd like to connect with me personally, and I hope you do, hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook where I'm Lensshark. That's LENSSHARK. All right, with that, I'll see you all in episode 90. We're just 10 away from triple digits. Hard to believe. Well, it's F8 and 250th of a second outside. It's time to shoot.
Please subscribe to the Petapixel Photography Podcast. My daddy is the host.
You know, that brave man stared down four tanks, and who knows how he was tweeted when... Tweeted? Yeah, he wasn't tweeted. This is way before Twitter.